Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Vav Amud Aleph, four lines down. Amar Rav Kahana. Kahana tells us, Yishtaya li Rav Chama. We heard over from Rav Chama, Bar Brate, and likely the Girsa changes to Chama, which means that it was Rav Chama who was the grandson of Chama. So he was named after his grandfather. So he told me that Rabba Bar Nachmani, Agav Shmado Nach Namshe, that Rabba Bar Nachmani, who is Stam Rabba that we see throughout Shas, he passed away because, as Rashi notes over here, but as we get through the story, it was a fear of the Gzerat Hashmad, and that the government was actually after him, and because of that fear that the government would capture him, that's what caused him to pass away. So, Achlo Bei Kurtza Bei Malko. So now the word Achlo Bei Kurtza is used to translate in the Torah, the Targum of Holech Rachil. That's someone who spreads rumors around, traffics in gossip, brings information to parties. Over here, it's used, Achlu Bei Kurtza, is to indicate that the person was Malshin, or was telling on Rabba Bar Nachmani. Rashi also notes that the reason that it's called Achlu Bei Kurtza is because it must have been associated with a meal. And that was the way that this type of gossip or conversation was passed along, was that they used to have a meal, and then they used to have a wink-wink or a communication of some sort that allowed these parties to pass information. But when it happens in the context of Bei Malka with the king, it's obviously some sort of negative information about a particular party or particular group that they're trying to convey to the king in order to get them in trouble. Amru, Ikachad Gavra Biudai, there's this one individual amongst the Jews, the Kamavatel Tresar Alfe Gavre Misrael, Yarcha Bekaita, Yarcha Besidva. There's this one Jew who by himself causes the unemployment of 12,000 people from Klal Yisrael, 1 month in the spring and 1 month in the fall. It's the Yarche Kala. It's right before Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei. It's right before Pesach in Nisan, where he used to give the shiurim, and they would come learn by him to prepare for the upcoming holidays. But the problem is that he's mevatel them, mikarga demalko, that he causes them not to pay the poll tax that was due to the king. Now it's either because the people, as Rashi says, weren't found in their houses anymore, and since they weren't home, when the collector came around to collect the poll tax, he couldn't get them. He collected on a monthly basis. That month, nobody was home. 12,000 people weren't home on that month, and so he couldn't collect the tax. Or they didn't work during that period of time, so there was nothing to collect from them, right? So there was no quote-unquote income tax during that period, but they felt that he was diminishing the coffers of the king because of his shiurim that attracted so many people. So Shadru Pristaka de Malka Batrei. So they sent a messenger of the king, they sent someone after him in order to bring him to trial. V'lo Ashkeche. They couldn't catch up with him, they couldn't find him. Arak v'azal mi Pumpedita la Akra. He went from Pumpedita to Akra. Mi Akra la Agma. And he went from Akra to the Agma. I don't know if it's the name of a place or the swamps. Mi Agma l'shchin. From Agma to Shchin. Umi Shchin l'tzrifa. From Shchin to Tzrifa. Tzrifa is a hut. But umi Tzrifa l'eina demayim. And then from there to the spring, the water springs. Umi eina demayim to Pumpedita. And then from eina demayim he came back or circled back to Pumpedita. But Pumpedita Ashkeche. So they finally found him or caught up with him in Pumpedita. Ikla Pristaka de Malka la Haush Pisa de Rabo. This messenger of the king ended up taking residence or staying in the bed and breakfast that was hosting Rabo. So they turn out now they're in the same location. Krivu Taka Kame. They brought a table in front of him. They were serving food to this messenger, to this consul of the king. Bashku Trey Kase. And they gave him 2 cups of wine to drink. And then they removed the table. This reminds you of the Gemara in Pesachim that they used to present whatever they were eating on a table. And then when they were finished, they pulled the table away. So they presented him with 2 cups of wine. He drank, and then they pulled it away. Hadar patsufei la'achorei. It's the Gemara that we saw together in Pesachim. It should remind you of the zugot that we discussed over there. Because that's the problem that happens here, which is he drank 2 cups of wine, and because he drank in even numbers, the Shadim got a hold of him. And his head was turned around backwards. So his head was now facing the back instead of the front. Amrulei, my Navi, le Gavra de Malku. So they said to Rabbo, what are we going to do? This person is an emissary of the king, and we can't just leave him like this. We've got to do something to solve the problem. So Amrulei, krivu taka le kamei. Bring a table in front of him. Ashkyu chad kasav. V'dayu le taka mi kamei. And then pull the table away from him so that he only drinks an odd number. V'litze, and that will cure the problem. Abdulei achi, they did that. V'itze, and sure enough, he was cured. His head was back on his shoulders in the proper way. Amar midya yidano de gavra de kabina hachahu. I know for sure the person I'm searching for is here. Likely because of what just happened to him. He knew that there was some supernatural things happening over here. And he attributed that to the uniqueness or the importance of Rabbah. Whether there was Hashem protecting him or whether the cure that was brought must have been from someone who had some sort of knowledge. But he assumed that Rabbah was there. Bochish Abatrei, he searched after him, V'ashkeche, and he found him. He catches up with Rabbah finally. Amar Azilna Meha. He says, look, I'm going to leave here. Imiktal Katlu Lahau Gavra. If they kill that person, here he's referring to himself in the third person, says, if they kill me, Lo Maglina, I will not reveal your whereabouts. V'nigide Minagdin Le, if they torture me, Maglina, then I will disclose the information. I won't be able to withstand the torture, so therefore I'm going to have to disclose where you are. But if they simply just kill me, then it'll be fine and I won't have to disclose the information. So at Yehuda Kamei, so they brought Rabbah before this individual, this emissary of the king. Ailela Adrona, Vitarke the Bava Ba'anpe. He took him up to a room upstairs, to a small chamber upstairs, and then closed the door on him, locked him up there. Boy Rachme, Rabbah prayed to Hashem for Rachamim. Parak Ashita, one of the walls fell or collapsed where he was being kept in that chamber. Arak Va'azel Agma, he then ran away and went into the areas of the swamp. So it's interesting because the individual already seemed to indicate that he wasn't going to turn Rabbah over to the authorities. Despite that fact, he still took Rabbah and locked him up upstairs. Even given that, Rabbah seemingly was still worried about this individual, probably because he locked him upstairs, and therefore he breaks out using his tefillah, using a strength from Hashem. He is able to get out of there and then runs away back to the Agma. If you remember before, that was part of his circuit that he had done before. He was sitting on a palm tree stump, and he was learning. He was out there learning. Kamiflage mitivta derekia. They had a machloket in the yeshiva shalmala. Im baheret kodemet l'seir lavan. We know for certain that if the white splotch, which would be otherwise known as a nega, if it reaches the requisite size and has the simanei tuma, that nega, if it precedes the white hairs that grow on it, then it is tameh. One of the simanei tuma for a nega tzarat is if you bring the nega tzarat that meets the requisite minimum shiur of a gris, then he locks you up. If, after he's locked you up, the black hairs that were on this beheret turn white, that is a siman tuma for a beheret. So here, the Gemara says, it's obvious from the Torah, as well as the Mishnayot, that if the beheret precedes the white hairs, meaning that they were black before and now they're white, then certainly that is a siman tuma, and the mitzorah is tameh. V'im se'ar lavan kodem la beheret, tahor. On the other hand, if the white hairs precede the baharat, means that the hairs were already white prior to the negatzarat coming about, tahor. Then the mitzorah is tahor. There might be other signs of tumah that come about, like pishayon, which means the expansion, the growing of the baharat. Those are other simanei tumah. But as far as the white hairs are concerned, they do not act as a siman tumah because they preceded the baharat. Safik. What happens if we don't know which preceded which? We don't know whether it was the beheret was there first or the hair that was there first. What do we do? Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer Tahor. Kadosh Baruch Hu says the individual is Tahor, the Mitzora is Tahor. Kulu Mitivta Derekia Amre. But everyone else in the Yeshiva Shel Mala says Tameh. So here you have a machloket between a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Yeshiva Shel Mala as to what we do in a case of Safek. In the case of Safek, Kadosh Baruch Hu says the person should be Tahor. And the remainder of the yeshiva says that it should be tameh. V'amrei man nochach. Who's gonna bring, come up here and be the decisor in this situation? Who's gonna come here to give us the answer to the question. It says, Nochach Rabba Bar Nachmani. We're going to bring up Rabba so that he can answer the question. He's someone who has the wherewithal to answer the question. Now, first of all, the question itself is a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah Nigayim. It's a machloka between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanakama there says whether it's a Safek that it is Tamei. Rabbi Yeshua says Kiha with a Kuf, which is unclear what he says. We're going to see that Rabba himself, Rabba Bar Nachmani, interprets the Kiha to be Tahor. And therefore, Rabba himself paskins Tahor, which is in agreement with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's Rabba's psak that is Tahor. Interestingly enough, just as an aside, the Rambam paskins, you can see here, by the Ot Bet from the Ein Mishpat, he paskins like the Metivta Derakia. He paskins like the Yeshiva Shamala against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is an amazing thing that we have a psak halacha whereby we're paskining against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. This relates to the Gemara we saw back in the Perek HaZahab, which is Lo B'Shamayim Hi. It's not something that's determined in Shamayim, and so despite the fact that that was the Kodesh Baruch Hu's position, similar to the case by Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus, where they agreed with Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus had the right answer, despite that fact, it's determined by those down here. Now the truth is that here you have the support of Rabba Bar Nachmani, who is also now down here, who supports that position of Rabbi Yeshua and seemingly paskins like him. So over there, that would be support for the fact that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Tahor is also the position of someone down here as well. And therefore, it wouldn't be B'Shamayim Hi that psak. Nevertheless, the Rambam, not mentioning this principle, paskins like the Yeshiva Shamala and not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the case of Tahor V'Tameh. Now, what their machloket revolves around might have to do with the stam or default status of the individual. Over here you have two chazakot that are competing when it comes to a safek. You have the chazakah that an individual or the goof of an individual has a cheska tahara. We assume that every person is tahor unless proven otherwise. So the chazakah in terms of the individual himself is that they are tahor. On the other hand, you have here a beheret and a siman tuma. So you have a chazoka of issues that would normally lead to a psak of tuma, even though we don't know the order of them. But nevertheless, you have a baharet, you have hairs, you have, in a sense, circumstantial evidence that this is likely a nega, and therefore that chazoka leads you to the side of tameh. And so therefore the machloket here might revolve around which chazoka trumps. Is the chazoka that the goof of the individual is tahor, is what governs? Or is it the chazakah that we already have a riyuta in the chazkat aguf, which is now he already has a beheret, and he has white hairs, which seem to reduce the chazakah of taharat aguf, and therefore we would lean to the side of saying that these are indications of tuma, and therefore the chazakah of tuma would trump. In an allegorical way, I would suggest that the argument here might be similar to the argument that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with the Malachim, both at the time of creation at Ma'aseh Bereishit, which is related by the Midrash over there, as well as by Har Sinai, as to the worthiness of human beings to be created, number one. Number two is to accept the Torah, or be the purveyors of the Torah. And that tension between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Malachim might be manifest over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the Chezkat Adam is Tahor, that the person's default status is that they are good, and that they will do right, and that they will reach that nitzotzak dusha, the neshama that's in them, and that will govern their lives. They make mistakes, things happen, but the overwhelming chezka tatara is what governs the life of a human being. On the other hand, whether it's the metivta shalmalo, the yeshiva shalmalo, which is the chachamim that are there, or it is the malachim that are there, they look at the human being in a different way. They see them in a more negative light, which is that Yetzer Adam Ra Minu Rav, that a person is evil from his outset, he's looking to do bad, and the chazoka is that he's going to act on that, and he's going to muddy, or sully the gufa tahor that he goes with because of his nature to sin and to chase after the material items. And so then on an allegorical level, that might be what the machloket is here. And Rabba is the decisor in the machloket, because here we see a human being who's risen to tremendous heights, and is tahor lagamre, has dedicated his life to that of kedusha, and you can see the tremendous power that exists within a human being and the ability of a human being to elevate themselves even b'olam hazeh. So I say that as an allegorical explanation of the machloket over here. That also is possible that Rabba was slated to pass away to visit Yeshiva Shalmala, and this was a way of easing in Rabba to passing away. And that is that in a dream, he sees all of this, and instead of it being the story of the Gemara, it's really a dream of Rabba. He's feeling uneasy about passing away, and they're trying to coax him into passing away by saying, you're going to be learning, it's going to continue, be Yeshiva Shalmala, that which you're doing here, be Yeshiva Shalmata. Amar Rabba Bar Nachmani, the reason they wanted Rabba Bar Nachmani to come up and be the deciding factor is, because he said about himself, Ani Yachid bin Nigayim, Ani Yachid ba'olot. I am unique with regards to Nigayim and Olot, meaning I'm the buck stops here, I'm the expert in Nigayim and Olot, and so anything that has to do with the psak, with relation to Nigayim and Olot, I'm the address for that. Shadru Shlicha Batrei, so they sent a shliach, meaning that from upstairs, they sent a shliach to go pick up Rabba, to bring him back to the Yeshiva Shalmala. Lava Matzi, Malach HaMavet, the Mikra of Lei. The Malach HaMavet, who was the shliach, the angel of death, couldn't get near him. Midolohava Kaposik Mipume Migirse, because he never stopped learning. This is similar as echoes of the story in the Gemara and Shabbat in Bamei Melikim with regards to David HaMelech. It's not exactly the same, but the genre and the type of the story is the exact same thing, which is the Malach HaMavet is unable to get the upper hand on David because he's always learning. So similar to the story there by David HaMelech, where the Malach HaMavet causes some sort of distraction or disturbance to stop him from learning and get better of him, the same thing happens over here. Adahochi, while Rabba's there learning, Noshov Zika, a wind blew, Ve'avish Benekane, and it made a noise between the reeds. Avish is like Avshamilta that we find by the Gemara in Shabbat, which is something that makes a lot of noise. So there was rustling in the reeds. Savar Gunda de Parshehu. He thought it was a troop. Now, Parshe over here could be from the word Parash, Parashim, which is cavalrymen, or it could be from the word Paras, if you spell with a sin, which means Persian troops. But either way, he thought it was the government troops coming to get him. Amar tinach nafshei, dau gavra, v'loim sor b'yada de malchuta. So Rabba says about himself, let my life be taken rather than be captured by the government troops. So he didn't want to be taken by the government troops. He said, I'm better off passing away naturally and not having to deal with the government troops. So in a sense, he acquiesced unbeknownly to what the Malach HaMavet was supposed to do, which was to bring him up to Shamayim and for him to pass away. As he passed away, Amar, Tahor, Tahor. He said, Tahor, Tahor, here is the psak that they were looking for, which is that he agreed with the Kaddish Baruch Hu that it was Tahor. Yatzta bat kol ba'amro, heavenly voice came out and said, Ashrecha Rabba bar Nachmani, shegufcha Tahor, lucky are you, Rabba bar Nachmani, that your guf, your physical being is Tahor, yatzta nishmatcha b'tahor, and your soul left you with the word Tahor, obviously an indication of the fact that he was Tahor, both in the physical world, in the Gufani side, as well as on the Neshama side, that he was completely Tahor, and that's why Tahor twice. But it also relates to what we said before, that when we have a Safek, what is the determination? And so over here we said they have a Cheskat Aguf of Tahara and a Cheskat Neshama of Tahara, but the Neshama governs, and therefore the person is Tahor. And that's what he says, that Yatzah Nishmatcha B'Tahor. Similar story is brought by the Sarah Haruge Malchut, that when they killed, he was saying Kiddush, passed away with the word Kadosh. Yatzah Nishmato B'Kadosh. And then the Bat Kol comes out and says a similar type of thing. So this idea that when the person passed away, there's some sort of stamp of approval from above that this was a unique individual. Nafal Pitka Mirikia. The problem is that Rabba now is in the middle of a swamp all by himself. Nobody knows that he passed away. So how do they find out, or how do the people in the city know about it? So a small message, a note, falls from heaven, Bapumpadita, Rabba Bar Nachmani Ditpakesh, B'Yeshiva Shalmala. Rabba Bar Nachmani was requested to join the Yeshiva Shalmala. Nafku Abai V'Rava V'Kulu Rabbanan. Rabbi and Rava, who are both Talmidim of Rabba, and Rabbi Bar Nachmani. It's also told of the story that Rabbi Bar Nachmani helped to bring up Rabbi and Rava when they were orphaned, when they didn't have anybody to take care of them. He also taught them Torah. So they lead this procession, Rabbanon, Le'usuke Bey, to go take care of Rabbi Bar Nachmani, to find where he is and to bury him properly. They didn't know where he was because he had run away from the government. Nobody knew where he was. Azul Agma, they went out to the swamps, they went out to the fields. Chazu Tzipare Demitalale Vikaime. They saw there was a large flock of birds casting a shadow and not moving. Amreish Mamino Hotomhu. It means he's gotta be over there. Birds are not usually stationary. And especially here, you have a bunch of birds casting a shadow in order to protect the body of Rabbi Bar Nachmani. It's clear as siman or symbol that he was there. Sabduo Tlata Yome. They eulogized him for 3 days, Utlata Leluta, and 3 nights. Nafal Pitcha, a note comes down from Shemaim, Kola Poresh Yehei Bin Nidui. Anybody who leaves here will be excommunicated, meaning it's not sufficient. What you've done until now is not enough. Sabduo Shiva Yome. Then they continue to eulogize him for 7 days. Nafal Pitcha, another note falls from heaven, L'chudave Techem L'shalom. Everybody can go home now peacefully. So over here, it's not clear as to whether they had already buried him or he was lying in state while these eulogies are going on. I'll assume, since it doesn't mention the burial afterwards, that they buried him immediately. And then this, what we're talking about here, the eulogies, which you usually associate with the burial, was a part of the Shiva, a part of the Avelut over here. Now, the Avelut is because this Avelut is not an Avelut of Kirva, which is their relatives of Rabba, but rather out of respect and the fact that he was the Mora D'Atra as well as the leading Gadol Ador, that they had to properly attend to him in this way. And that's what it means. When they said Shiva, they eulogized. They spoke about his greatness. They spoke about who he was. It seems to be that people weren't sure or certain as to what exactly was the greatness of Rabba. And so at first they thought it was sufficient that they eulogized him for 3 days. That's a significant amount, especially given how many people were there. And so they felt they had discharged their obligation vis-a-vis Rabba. The note from Shemayim says, no, 3 is not enough. You need 7 days. You really didn't understand the greatness of Rabba. And that's true of Gedolim in general, that many times we know they're great, but we don't really know how great they are. And many times after they pass away, we hear stories or people come around. And these eulogies help us to grasp and understand the greatness of the individual. And that's what it seems to be here, that they have 3 and 7 are significant periods of time within Avelut. When we speak about in Moed Katan, the Gemara talks about the first 3 days being for Bechi, and then afterwards for Avelut. So these are periods of time that are significant within the mourning period. And so they thought 3 days was sufficient, and Mina Shemayim, they say, no, you need 7 days, and you really need to understand or grasp the greatness of Rabba. Hayoma denachnavshe, on the day that Rabba passed away, Dalia Zappel, there was this tremendous gusts of wind or storms that came about. Vidari lahautaya, and it carried this Arab merchant, Kirachim Gamma, who was riding a camel, Mihai Gisa denar Papa, Vishajia Bahach Gisa. Took him from one side of the river Papa to the other side. I mean, that's how strong the storm or the wind was. Amar Maihai says, what's going on over here? What type of storm is this? All of a sudden, there's this tempest that's sweeping me away. Amalei Nach Nafshei, the Rabba Bar Nachmani. Rabba Bar Nachmani passed away. And that's the cause for this tempest. Amar Lefanav. So it's interesting here. We're talking about Tayo is usually used to refer to a non-Jew and usually refers to an Arab merchant. And over here, he says, Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shalalam, he speaks to God and says, Kulei Alma Didachu, the whole world is yours. For Rabba Bar Nachmani Didach, and Rabba Bar Nachmani also belongs to you. At de Rabba, Verabba Didach. You belong to Rabba, and Rabba belongs to you. Amai Kamechavret Lei La Alma. Why are you destroying the world now that you have Rabba Bar Nachmani by you? Nach Zappo. And then the storm or the tempest subsided, and the Arab merchant carried on his way. So again, whether the story is real or allegorical, it's this idea that Rabba's leaving the world has significant impact. Just like the famous Midrash, when Yaakov leaves, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, when he leaves, it has an impact. And so too here, when Rabbah left the world, it has an impact. But the individual who is, quote-unquote, davening here to Hashem says, listen, you are here in Olam Hazeh, you are there in Olam Haba. Rabbi Rabban Nachmani is with you in either case. He's with you when he's in Olam Hazeh, he's with you when he's in Olam Haba. So as far as you are concerned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing's changed. So if nothing's changed, you shouldn't be destroying the world or ruining the world because Rabbah left here. Because either way, Rabbah was with you in both cases, whether he was here or there. And so therefore, leave us here to survive after the passing of Rabbi Rabban Nachmani. In a sense, maybe even a little attempt at consolation, that the world has to go on. Even though we've lost Rabbi Rabban Nachmani, who was the Gadol Ador, who was the leader of that generation, nevertheless, the world has to continue. It's not the end of the world. Even though, in a sense, it feels like it, and there is a tremendous loss here, still, like any other instance in the world, we continue on, and that there's still a remnant, even after we lose Gedolim, like Rabbi Rabban Nachmani. So that's the end of the story about Rabbi Rabban Nachmani, speaking about the greatness or the uniqueness of Rabbah, like we spoke about the unique traits of Rabbi and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Now the Gemara jumps back to what it left off with back on Pei Gimel and Pei Dalet, was speaking about the Tanaim who were obese or who were overweight. And over here it goes back and says, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta Bal Basar Haba. He was obese or overweight. So this, he's now added to the list of individuals who we discussed already. It was Rabbi Papa and Rabbi Yochanan who were Amoraim. And we saw that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi are the Tanaim that we mentioned before. So we already had four individuals mentioned. Here's the fifth individual, who is Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta. I guess he was probably the brother of Rabbi Yossi bar Chalafta, who was found in the Mishnah many times and is the father of Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Yossi. So it would make sense that his family genes, that Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Yossi, the brother of Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Yossi, also had this feature about him that he was overweight or he was obese. So Yom Echad Hava Chamim Alei, one day it was really hot for him. Obviously, it's been compounded by his size. Habasolik biyati vashina de Torah. He went and sat on the edge of the stones of the mountain. He was looking for some fresh air for to cool off a little bit. Amar la de brate. So he said to his daughter, Biti hanifi alai bimnifa. Can you fan me with the fan in order to cool me off? And I'll give you blocks or loaves of nard, which is spike nard or a perfume. It's a type of aromatic vegetation. So at that point, the wind began to blow. How many loaves of nard do I owe to the master of the wind, or meaning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he got the natural fan that came about because the wind began to pick up and brought him the relief that he had sought from his daughter fanning him. Okay, now we go back to the Mishnah, which is a kol k'minhag medina. We said before in the Mishnah that when you hire the workers, the default is the practice of the local area. Hakol atuemai. What does that come to include? Okay, and the Bavli in general asks that about a Mishnah. Whenever the Mishnah gives you a general principle, the Bavli views it as not being simply a summary of the Mishnah, but adding some information that you wouldn't have known from the examples given in the Mishnah. So, Latuye ba'atrin nehige michrach rifto mishte antpaka. It comes to include a place where the practice is that the individuals, the workers, break bread and drink wine, and that they get a real meal before they start the work. Diamar luhu, if he says to them, kadimu ba'aytiduchu, he says, you listen, guys, show up early, and I'll give you this great breakfast or this great brunch. But if you guys show up just at the start of work, I'm not going to be able to provide it for you. Come and eat on your time, and we'll make sure that you get a good meal. So, amrulo lab kol kaminach. The workers can say back to him, that's not your prerogative. We are enjoined to show up at work on time, but that means that you also have an obligation to provide us with the meal. And the meal is part of the workday, meaning that the 8-hour, quote-unquote, workday includes lunch break and includes the eating of breakfast and brunch, and he can't demand that they show up beforehand to eat so that they can work starting from the time that they are on the clock. Now we're back to the Mishnah, where we had the incident in the Mishnah with Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya, who sent his son out to hire workers, and then he offered them food along with the hiring, and then his father tells him to go back and tell them or limit the amount that you offer them with the food, because otherwise we're going to be on the hook for an unlimited amount of provisions. So Maaseh Listor, does the incident that's brought in the Mishnah come to contradict the halacha that we said until now? The halacha we said until now is everything follows the practice of the area. All of a sudden, Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya says, well, if you promise them food, then it can be unlimited. Why is it unlimited? Isn't it governed by the practice of the area? So why is this incident brought in the Mishnah when it contradicts the principles established before? Gemara, as usual, says, chasurei mechzera. You're missing the conjunctive words, the words that transition in the Mishnah, which is vahane hachiktani. This is what is meant. V'im pasak lehen mizonot. If he offered them food, riba lehen, then he obviously meant to exceed the amount that was there before. If by default they're entitled to meals, because that's the practice of that locale, if you then offer them food, you don't need to offer them food for them to be entitled to that, because that's part of the package. So therefore, if you do offer them food, it means that you're expected to exceed or be of above and beyond whatever was the practice of the locale. And now this incident becomes a proof to that, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Matya, Shamar libnot says, Chor lanu polim, Halach pasak lehem mizonot, Shabai tel Aviv, when he came back, Amar lo b'ni, Afilo tasalen kesudot Shlomo b'shato, even if you make for them like Shlomo Melech in his time, a spread like he had, Lo yatsati dei chovatcha, Imahem, you haven't discharged your obligation vis-a-vis them, Shem b'ni Avram Yitzchak v'Yakov, because they are the children of Avram Yitzchak v'Yakov. Here this backs up what we now said in the Mishnah, was that the son offered them mizonot, even though it was a place they were entitled to mizonot. So his father sees in that a problem, because there was no limit now, or no governing rule about what he has to offer them, and therefore he feels like he's on the hook for everything, because they are Bnei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Just say this as an aside, this is very much a part of the Hasidic thought that every individual, no matter how low they are, or how great they are, we're all princes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's when the Hasidic thought why even the lowest person on the rung should dress in a manner of royalty and conduct themselves in a manner of royalty, because royalty is not about your socioeconomic standing, but rather the fact that you are Bnei Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. And so Hasidus really looks at the elevation of the individual, whereas the called the Miknagdim really looked at the smallness or valuelessness of the individual vis-a-vis Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is great, and we are nothing. Here, Hasidus took a different approach, which is to look at the greatness of the individual, not from mitzad of gava, but to empower the individual to accomplish and empower the individual to do good and to act good, because you've now elevated them along the lines of the Midrashim by Aaron, where he used to encourage people to do the right thing, because when he spoke to them, they would feel guilty, or they would feel like they had to live up to what his expectations were. So if you elevate the individual and you have higher expectations of them, the assumption is that they will live up to those expectations. And so again, this just as an aside, this is very much similar to that hashkafa in Hasidut that looks at the individual as being princely. The memra du sudata da amravino adifa midishlomo. So he says over here, they're deserving of something even greater than the meal of Shlomo HaMelech, because they are the children of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Which means that being the children of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov entitles you to something greater than the Suda of Shlomo HaMelech, implying that the Avot had something more. Faktiv. Wait a minute, let's look at the meal or the presentation of Shlomo HaMelech. It says, Vahi lechem Shlomo liyom echad. This was the food that was presented to Shlomo on any given day. Shloshim kor solet, 30 kor of fine flour, v'shishim kor kamach, and 60 kor of regular flour, asara bakar briim, and 10 bakar that are strong, big, healthy, v'asara, actually the pasuk says, v'esrim bakar ri'i, and 20 pasturing cows, umeyatzon, and 100 of the flock animals, levat, that doesn't even include me ayal, the gazelle, utzvi, and the deer, v'yachmur, which is in the family of the deer, ubar burim avusim, and these stuffed or fattened quail. So here is the meal that we're speaking about in terms of sudash lomo bishato. And now you're telling me that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov had more than this? This is an exorbitant amount of food. And it's unbelievable that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov would have anything close to this. V'amar Gurion ben Astion, Mishmei Derav. Just to reinforce this, he says to us, Halalo la milan shel tabachim. That was for taking care of the froth that comes up in the cooking process. Milan shel tabachim is something that is noted in the Gemara a number of places where they used to use the flour or the dough to put around the top of the cooking pots to absorb the froth, or as it boiled over, it would take in or take away that froth or the fat that floated to the top. So it wasn't even used for eating. It was used to cleanse the item that they were cooking. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Lolo Tzikei Kedera, that was for a type of food that was made, whether it's a stew or some sort of cholent that they put together. That's what this was used for. It wasn't even for the meat itself that they were going to eat. So these make it even greater, which is that they're saying about this food that we're speaking about here, the flour that you mentioned before, the items that you mentioned here, they're not even the real deal. They're just a portion of what was cooked here. One of them suggests that the flour wasn't used. There it doesn't say lechem. There was flour. So they assume that the flour is used in a manner that is amilan shel tabachim, which is to catch the overflow of the froth on the top of the pot. And the other one says that the meat here wasn't used to be eaten, but for tzikek deira, to make the side dishes that were there. Rav Yitzchak, elef nashim ayu l'shlomo. Shlomo had 1,000 wives. Really, that's 700 wives and 300 pilag shilt. Kol achat v'chat asta lo bebeita kach. Each one of them prepared this amount in their house. My time up. Zos savrua shemetz lisoed ayom. Each one of them thought, maybe he's going to eat by me today. Zos savrua shemetz lisoed ayom. The other one thinks it's by me. So, in each case, they each prepared that amount in case Shlomo Melech came. So again, here they're multiplying or making the numbers of Shlomo Melech grow and grow and grow. The reason to do that is to show then how great that which Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did, because they exceeded all of this. Bilu gabi Avram tiv. Avram, it just says, Vela bakar rats Avraham. Vayikach ben bakar rach betov. So bakar, one cow. So we're talking about one cow or one young calf. But other than that, there's not much here. So then, what are they talking about that Avram Avinu exceeded that of Shlomo Melech? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav ben bakar echad, rach shnaim, Vitov Shlosha. So then, first of all, here we start to get into the Agadic side of this, which is, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav says that the Ben Bakar means one, the Rach means two, and the Tov means three. Even if you do that, now you have three cows, it still doesn't get to the level of Shlomo Melech. That's number one. Number two is, the word Ben Bakar, or Ela Bakar, Ratz Avraham, is in the singular form. So what's the Chiddush here that Ben Bakar means one? That's what it would have meant even without Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So very good. So that might be the answer is what you're mentioning here, is that the Gemara points out in other places that when you say the word shor, shor is both the singular and the plural form of oxen. When the Torah says shor, it doesn't necessarily mean that it means one shor, it could mean multiple shor. Same way that in the English language, the word fish. Fish can mean a single fish, or fish can mean a school of fish. There's no singular and plural difference. So the same thing by bakar, like you were saying, that the word bakar can be used to mean both singular and plenty. And so over here, what Rav Yehuda Amar Rav comes along to do is limit the number and say it's not one, but it's also not many, it's three. And based on what he's saying here, so he's bringing framework to what the word bakar means in this case. Amar says, still, you only have three against what Shlomo Melech did. Hatam tlata tore letlata gabre. Oh, there's a big difference. Over there, there were three malachim who were visiting Abraham. And he's preparing three cows for three individuals. It means that a cow per person. Hacha by Shlomo Melech, who was the Chol Yisrael v'Yehuda. That was for all of Klal Yisrael and Yehuda. Shenemar Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim k'chol asher al hayam. We were speaking about Klal Yisrael at the time. Their population is massive. So when Shlomo Melech is preparing a feast like that to feed the people on a per head basis, it's not so significant. It's not so much. Versus Avram Avinu, who is preparing a whole cow for each individual. And that's what it's not the quantitative amount, but rather the relative amount of food to the number of individuals who are eating. Now the Gemara takes a diversion for a second and says, Mar Barim Avusim. At the end of the Pasuk, it says the fattened or stuffed quail. What exactly does that mean? So the first answer we have is Amarav, Sheuvsim Otam Bal Korcham. That they used to force feed them to fatten them up. And that's why they were considered to be avus. Avus is a forced feeding or trough for the animal. Shmuel amar she'avusim v'omdim elehem. It's not that they were force-fed, but that they themselves ate well. They were given plenty of food, and their only job was to eat. And so they ate a lot, and they became fattened in that way. B'yochanan amar mevi'in tor mimarito b'dilo anis v'tarnagolit me'ashpeta b'dilo anisa. B'yochanan says that you bring a shore from its grazing, but a shore that has never worked. You bring the chicken from its coop, but in a case where it wasn't used to lay eggs. So in that case, they're eight, but they didn't have the requisite work that would have skinnied them or used up the food that they were consuming, and therefore they got fat. And that's what it's referring to. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Muvchar shebebehemot, shor. Muvchar shebeofot, tarnagolet. And Rabbi Yochanan continues to say that the best of the animals is the ox, and Muvchar shebeofot, and the best of the birds is the tarnagolet, is the chicken. And that's why they're the animals that are being mentioned over here. It might be, it's possible to argue over here that Rabbi Yochanan is not necessarily arguing on Rav and Shmuel before, because he's not explaining the word avusim necessarily. He's just saying that the word avusim is modifying not only the barburim, but also the animals that were mentioned prior in the pasuk. And so what he's saying is, don't think that it's the barburim avusim, but the adjective also modifies or qualifies not only the barburim, but also the bakar and the other items that were mentioned beforehand. And so then you could argue that Rabbi Yochanan accepts either Rav or Shmuel's explanation of avusim. He's just saying that it's not limited to the barburim, but it includes the other animals that are there as well. So then we have a fourth answer, or if you think Rabbi Yochanan is not a different answer, this will be a third answer. Amar Meimar, Zagta Ukmita. It is a black rooster, Bei Butnita. Rashi has a possible gears of putnita, that is ha mifatemet babayit, something that is fattened up in the house, or he gives the alternative of butnita from what balat keres, that is a large stomach, meaning that it's a very large black rooster, the mishtakacha bene atzrei, which is found amongst the presses, so that the rooster here eats all the sediment and the refuse that is thrown away from the pressing of the grapes. It uses that as its feed, and therefore it's got plenty and plenty of feed. Domatia pasia canyo. And it's so fat or so big that it can't even jump over a stick, over a reed, meaning that it can't even take flight even for that short amount because it's so heavy. So that's the type of animal that we're speaking about here, is this black rooster that is very large. So now we go back to Avram Avinu. For Avram Avinu it says, Vela bakar ratz Avram. Avram ran to prepare the meat or the cow. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Ben Bakar Echad, Rach Shnaim, Vitov Shlosha. That's what we brought before, that memory of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Ve'em Echad. Why don't we just say that it's one? Kedam Re'in She Rakich Vitav. Because that's the way people speak about meat. They say, bring me a nice cow that is soft and good. I mean, that those are adjectives modifying the bakar, not telling you that you had one bakar, then one rakich, and then one tov. No, it's one animal. It says, imkei nechtov rach tov. It should have just said it, ben bakar rach tov. The fact that it now has the vav in there, my vatov, what is that addition of tov, whether it's because the vav is added or because the punctuation under the vav is a kamatz, one of those reasons. Shmamina the drosha. It's coming to teach you that it's not just simply that this animal was rach v'tov, but rather that this animal was a ben bakar, but then there were additional b'nei bakar over here. Same a tray. So then say two, because the vav is only there by the word tov, it's not there by the word rach. Where it says, min tov the drosha, rach nami the drosha. Once you already say that the word tov is not being taken literally, but rather a drosha, you'll say the same about the word tov. And therefore, I have three words to darshan over here to teach me that he prepared three animals. Meitiv Rabba Barula, Vitema Rav Oshaya, Vitema Ravinotam Rabbi Oshaya, Vaiten El Anar. He gave it over to his young lad, Vimaherla Sototo, and he prodded him to quickly, assiduously prepare the meal there. Kochad Vichad Yave Lenar Chad. Each one he gave to one individual, meaning that there were three lads over here, and each animal he gave to each one of them. Vayikach chema v'chalav, takes the butter and the milk, ubena bakar, and the meat asher asa that was prepared, Vayitein lifneim, and he presented it before them. So again, here you have a problem, which is that the word na'ar is in the singular, as we just saw. And we just saw that the word here, now bakar, is in the singular. If you told me there are three of them, then why is it using the word na'ar in the singular? It should be the na'arim. He gives them the three lads to prepare the cows. And also here, when he brings it in front of them, it shouldn't just be ben abakar. It should be that he's bringing three meals in front of them. So the answer of the Gemara was that each one he gave to a na'ar. So the word na'ar is not indicative of the fact that there was only one lad there. It just means that every cow he gave to an individual na'ar. Then, vayitein lifnehem, the kama kama demashia aitil kamayu. That's as each one was finished, he brought it in front of them. So that's why it only says ben abakar in the singular, because each time when he presented it, as that cow was finished being prepared, he presented it to them. So he didn't bring it simultaneously, but rather sequentially, and that's why it writes it in the singular. Velamali tlato. Why do I need three cows? So this is what you mentioned that you remember from your childhood. Tiske bechad, it would have been enough with one. This is what Rashi quotes in Chumash. Why he did this was to provide them three tongues in mustard, and that might come out from the rach v'tov. So when they talk about the rach, the soft part, that's referencing the tongue, and tov is with the dressing or the chadal, the mustard that came along with it. So this was a delicacy of the kings, of the princes, and Avram presented each one of them with that. So he had to shech three animals in order to provide three tongues, one for each of them. And therefore, we are saying here that Avram's meal far exceeds that suda of Shlomo HaMelech, because he's providing a king's meal for each individual, not just a king's presentation to all the people or all of Am Yisrael. All right. A person should never deviate from the common practice in that area. When in Rome, do as the Romans. That doesn't mean that you're allowed to violate any Yitzurim in the Torah. Doesn't mean that you don't have to follow halacha. But it does mean that you shouldn't stand out in your conduct. And that is because, Sherei Moshe alad marom, when Moshe went up to heaven, lo achal lechem, he did not eat. Moshe says, lechem lo achalti, v'mayim lo shatiti, I didn't eat bread, I didn't eat water. So Moshe didn't bring provisions with him. He went up there three times for 40 days, and didn't bring any provisions with him, because after the first time he went up there, he realized he wasn't going to eat, because that's what they do in the heaven, they don't eat. So when he went up in the subsequent times, he didn't eat bread, he didn't drink water in order to conduct himself like they do up there when he was interacting with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with the Malachim. Malachi Asheret Yardu Lamato, the Malachim that came down, meaning to visit Abraham, Vachlu Lechem, and they ate the bread, meaning that even though Malachim don't generally eat, over here when they visited Abraham, they go ahead and they eat. Vachlu Savadatcha? Well, if they can't eat, how are they eating? What do you mean they ate? They made it appear as if they were eating and drinking and consuming that which was there in order not to change from the minag, not to deviate from that which is a normal practice in that area. Anyway, it's a big Musar Haskel, just in terms of thinking about how people conduct themselves. One should not stand out. One should try to blend in with everyone else and conduct themselves like everyone else, assuming that it's a proper conduct, assuming that that is something that doesn't go against the spirit or halachot of the Torah, that a person should not stand out in any way and keep the practices of the local area. Tosfot over here mentions that there is a stira in the Midrashim, because the Midrash in Eliyahu Rabbah mentions that the Malachim actually ate out of kavod for Abraham, that they deviated from their normal behavior, not just pretended to eat, but actually ate. And here Tosfot notes that there is what's called the Machloket HaMidrashim. It's an important principle that he mentions here. He also mentions it by the Man, with regards to whether the man fell double on Erev Yom Tov or not. He also mentions that it's machloket midrashim, but it's important to know that not every midrash is necessarily binding or normative, because we do have disagreements amongst the midrashim to fill in the stories that are missing, or parts of the stories that are missing, or giving us allegories. And therefore it's important both not to take the midrashim necessarily literally, but rather as lessons or things that they're teaching us, as well as the fact that the midrashim are subject to machloket, just like the halachic issues are subject to machloket. Rami Yehuda Marav, Kol ma she'asa Avram Avinu, the Malachi Asheret Batzmo, anything that Avram did to the Malachim by himself, meaning that he personally presented it or did it, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu Levanav Be'atzmo, Hashem took care of his children also in a direct manner. Kol ma she'asa Avram Yidei Shaliach, everything that was prepared by a messenger, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu Levanav Al Yidei Shaliach, Hashem also took care of Bnei Yisrael in a similar manner through a shaliach. So here they give you the examples. It says here, Ve'al ha-bakar ratz Avram. Avram ran to prepare the cow. Therefore, Venuach nasa meit Hashem. Then a wind blew from Hashem and brought the slav. So the quail that was brought to the midbar came directly from Hashem, just like Avram ran to the bakar to prepare the meat. Ve'ikach chema v'chalav. Avram, who presents the butter and the milk to the malachim himself directly. Therefore, hinei mamtir lechem lechem min hashamayim. Therefore, I'm going to present to you the bread from the sky. Now, that seems a little difficult, because what's the connection between the man and chema v'chalav? The Marsha over here has an interesting way of connecting it, based on the agadato, with regards to the man. Over there it says, v'yikach chema v'chalav aya schar haman, shum ein achalav, because it's similar to milk. In the agadato of the man, in Yoma it says, what is lashad hashemen? That's the way the Torah describes the man as being lashad hashemen, which means some sort of fried dough or sufganiyah of sorts. And there the Gemara Darshins mean lashon shadayim, from the nursing or the breasts that provide milk. And so similarly, the man was a sustaining type of food, just like the mother who feeds the child. So therefore he sees chalav being connected to the man, despite the fact that Avram, we're going to suss the lechem in a second, also brings lechem. But over there, the Marsha argues that the lechem that Avram brought was just presenting it. It wasn't the fact that he actually prepared it, or he brought it. In the end, actually, the Midrash Chazal says he didn't even bring it, because pirsa sarat nida, and therefore he wasn't able to bring out the chalav anyway. Those two things where Avram did it himself, they were presented or given to Bnei Yisrael directly. Similarly, when Avram stands over them to take care of them by the tree, similarly, where a God goes to provide water for Bnei Yisrael, and he tells Moshe where to go, he says, I'm going to be there with you by the rock, and that's where the water will be sourced from. And again, Avram accompanies the malachim to send them off. So too, Hashem oleich lifnehem yomam. Hashem accompanied Bnei Yisrael in the Anan and the Eish. Together, he directed them. Yukach na me'at mayim. On the other hand, yukach na me'at mayim. Take a little bit of water. Over there, since it was done yidei shliach, so too v'yikita batzur v'yitzav mimenu mayim v'shata. The water doesn't come directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather from the stone that he has to hit in order to provide the water. Upliga d'Rav Chama bar Chanina. And this argues on the interpretation of Rav Chama bar Chanina. The Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina. Chayin Tana debate Rabbi Yishmael, and we have a similar version of this from Rabbi Yishmael. B'schar shlosha zachu l'shlosha. For the reward of three things, they merited three things. B'schar chema v'chalav zachu l'man. From the reward of the chema and chalav that Avram presented, Bnei Yisrael got the man, which is similar to what we just said before. B'schar v'u omed olehem zachu l'amud anan. And because he stood over them, they were zoche to the Anan. That's different than what we said before. Because before we broke up the Omed Alehem from Hashem Aleich Lifnehem. B'schar yukach na ma'at mayim zachu l'beira shel Miriam. And with the schar of the water, they were zoche to the beir of Miriam, which is similar to what we're saying over here. We said that it was when he hit the rock, but here they call it the beira shel Miriam. So as Rashi notes, they're only arguing here about the Anan. The Marsha points out that there is the Gemara in Tanit that says that b'shchut shlosha yesh shlosha. B'shchut of Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron, we had three gifts, matanot tovot, in the midbar. B'shchut Aaron, the ananei akavod. B'shchut Moshe, the man. And b'shchut Miriam, the bear. So then how do you reconcile that with this? That it says here, b'shchut Avraham, they got those three gifts. So what the Marsha suggests is that with the zchut of Abraham, they would have had these items for a short period of time, or for a temporary amount of time. What Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam did was keep alive that zchut. They were able to sustain it, so that it kept them for the entire 40 years in the Midbar. So it's a combination of Avram's doing that initiates these types of gifts, but it is the zchut of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam that sustains the gifts on behalf of Bnei Yisrael. Yukach na ma'at mayim v'rachatzu raglechem. So Avram says, in the famous Rashi over there, take a little water and wash your feet. So the problem is that if you look at the others, like when Lavan and Lot offer people to stay by them, They offer them a place to stay, and then they offer them water to wash their feet. The other hand, Avram tells them to wash their feet before he offers them anything. So that's like the first thing that he presents to them. So Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Shmuel, Amru lo, v'chi baravim chashatanu, shem ishtachavim la'avak raglehem. So the Malachim say to Avram, what? You're choshed us that we are like the Arabs who bow down to the dust of the earth. Now, you have to remember that this is pre-Islam. So this is the Arabs of the, probably the Arabs of the day of the Amoraim and the Tanaim, but similar to those that were back in the time of Tanakh. They hadn't changed much, and they were still, quote-unquote, bowing down to the dust of their feet before they're, quote-unquote, enlightened by the entry of Islam later on, post this time period. So they say over here to Avram, what do you think, we're one of the locals here that bows down to the dust of the earth, and that's why you're telling us to wash off your feet? Kfar yatsa mimenu Ishmael. Ishmael already was born from Avraham. The answer or the statement over here is not clear whether that means that the reason Avraham was suspicious is because he already had Ishmael, who was a part of that behavior. Ishmael is the progenitor of the Aravim, and Ishmael's practices were already known to Avraham, and therefore he assumed that everybody just acted that way, or that was his default status. The Marsha suggests that maybe it was Midah Keneged Midah, which is that Avram was choshed b'ksherim, and we usually say a choshed b'ksherim loke b'gufo. Someone who is choshed and someone who is kasher gets punishment or hit themselves. And that's what happened. Ishmael came from him because he was choshed that the people bowed down to the dust. The problem with that explanation is that this is post the birth of Ishmael. So then you have to say that it was something that referred to Avram's practice even before the Malachim came. And then it's questionable why it was wrong in this practice, because it's one thing when it's the Malachim, it's another thing when it is these passerbyers that might likely were bowing down to the dust of their feet, and therefore he was justified in doing it. So it's a harder explanation, but it's a way to try to reconcile what this statement of the Malachim is over here. Vayirei alav Hashem be'elonei mamrei, v'hu yoshev petach ha'ol k'chom hayom. So it says that Hashem appears to him in Elonei Marei, and he's sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. My kechom ayom. Why was it at the heat of the day? Amar Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina. So again, this is the same Bala Memra that we just saw before, Rabbi Chama Bar Rabbi Chanina. So we're bringing down a number of memrot of him related to Avram Avinu. To ayom yom shlishi shel mila shel Avram ayah. It's the third day of his Brit Milah. And we know that on the third day, it's Machloket and the Rishonim, whether the third day is the most dangerous day. That's the way the Rambam presents it. The way Rashi presents it, it's not the most dangerous day, but it's the most painful of the days. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu came to be Mevakir Cholim to Avraham. Now, how do we know that he was Mevakir Cholim? Because the way that the Pasuk presents it is, Hashem appears to him in Elonei Mamrei, and yet we have no conversation between them. So, why was Hashem there if he wasn't conversing with Avraham? And whenever in the Torah we have Hashem appearing, it's usually because he's trying to convey or communicate with someone. Over here, Hashem appears without any form of communication. And therefore, they darshan that he came to be Mevakir Cholim to Avraham. Hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chama min Artika. Hashem took the sun out of its casement. Kedei Shelo Yatriach Oto Tzadik Borchim. In order to make it so hot that nobody was traveling so that Avraham wouldn't be bothered with passerbyers he was going to do Achnasat Orchim for. And so therefore, Hashem gave him a rest or a break. Shadrei le'Eliezer the Mepek the Bara. Avram sent Eliezer out to check. Nafak v'lashkach. And he doesn't find any guests. He doesn't find anybody traveling. Amar lo me'em nelecha. Says, I don't believe you. Avram is unwilling to accept it. And with Amrei Taman, that's what they say over there. Usually over there, when you're talking about in Bavel, means over in Eretz Yisrael. Leitim nuta b'avde. Servants are never trustworthy. You can never rely on a servant. It's a general principle when you engage other people to do something, they're never going to have the type of alacrity or investment that you have in the object itself. And therefore, they're less reliable or less invested in what you're doing. And so they're going to sometimes come back with an answer that is not the answer that you're looking for. It doesn't mean that Eliezer necessarily didn't see. Maybe he did see someone, but he didn't want to bother Avraham. He was trying to protect Avraham. Nafak iu chazil ha-kodesh baruch hu dekaya bovo. He goes out to go check for the guests, and he sees Hashem is waiting by the door. It's Hashem to be Mevakir Cholim. Hainu dichtiv. That's what it says. Al na tavor mi'alav decha. That you shouldn't pass by. Don't leave me. So now, in the beginning of the parsha over there, It uses the term Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. So there, the Rashi brings that there are two possible interpretations of the word Adonai, which would refer to Hashem, or it could refer to the Malachim, my masters. And so, depending on how you interpret Al Na Davor Me'Alavdecha, is he speaking to Hashem, or is he speaking to the Malachim that are standing there? If you think it's Chol, that means he's speaking to the Malachim. Don't pass by. Come in and visit. Stay with me. Let me be Machni Sochim. Otherwise, the way that Chazal interpreted here, as well as in the Gemara in Shabbat, is that he's speaking to Hashem saying, don't leave me. He puts Hashem on hold, and he goes out to deal with the Malachim. The Gemara in Shabbat learns from that, Godol Hachnasad Orchim Yoter Me'akpalat Pnei Ashchina, that the mitzvah of Hachnasad Orchim supersedes hosting a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Because here, Avram puts Hashem on hold in order to go deal with Hachnasad Orchim. Over here, the Gemara says, Al Na Tavar Me'Avdecha came into Chazad Ga'asar Vishari. Since then Hashem saw that Avram was unbandaging and bandaging his wound, his milah, Amar Lav Orach Ara Lamekam Ocha. It's not proper to stay here. Ainu Dichtiv, that's what it says, Vayisayinav, Vayyar Vinei Shlosha Neshim Nitzavim Alav. That he sees that there are three men standing there. Vayyar Vayyar Atzlikatam. Then he sees and he runs after them. Mi Atara Atu Kamu Alei. At first they were just standing there coming to approach him. Ki Chazyu Davalei Tzaro. When they saw that he was in pain, Amru Lav Orach Ara Lamekam Ocha. It's not proper for us to stay here. And they went to move on. So that's why it says, first of all, Vayyar twice, that he saw it twice. The first time he sees them stationary waiting. The second time he sees them moving away. Number two is Vayaratz. Why did he have to run after them the second time? It's because they began to leave. And so that explains the sequence in the Psukim. The Balei Tosafot over here note, Vayinu Tichtiv, Al Na Tavar Me'Avdecha Hocha Mashma, that Avraham had to tell Hashem to stay around because he wanted to leave. He says that goes against what it says in the Gemara in Shabbat, that Hashem was there and he put him on hold and he wasn't planning on leaving. And that's how you learn that Hachnasat Orchim supersedes the Hakpalat Pnei Ashchina. So Tosfot is bothered by that, and that's Stira. The Marsha, on the other hand, says he doesn't see a problem because Hashem does eventually speak to Avraham. After all this takes place, it says at the end there of the parsha, "Hamechase ani mi Avraham asher ani oseh." The Hashem says, "Should I hide from Avraham? What am I going to do to Sodom v'Amorah?" When he said, "After the Malachim leave, Hashem speaks to him." So what the Marsha points out is that the limud comes from different places. The limud over here comes from his saying, "Al nav tavor me'alavdecha," don't leave. He's saying to Hashem, "Stay here, don't leave." From which the Gemara here learns that Hashem wanted to leave because he saw Avraham was uncomfortable and was changing his bandages. That's why Avram says, don't leave, stay here. In the case in the Gemara in Shabbat, the way that they learn the fact that Gdola Hachnas Orchim may have Kabbalat Pnei Ashkina is because in the end, Hashem stays around and speaks to him later. So you see that if Avram put Hashem on hold, and Hashem is around, stays around, and speaks to him later. And that proves to you the issue of Hachnas Orchim. So therefore he says that the question of Tosafot is not right because they're learning it from different aspects of the story, and not both from the fact that Avram puts Hashem on hold. All right. Then, Man Nihu Shlosha Anashim. Who were the three men that came to visit Avram? It says, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael is the three angels that came to visit him. Michael, Shabbat Baseret Sarah. Michael came to tell the news to Sarah that she was going to have a child. Raphael, Shabbat Rapet Avram. Raphael came to cure Avraham, to be mevaker cholim and cure him from the milah. Gabriel azalam apchei stom. And Gabriel came to overturn stom. Va'aktiv vayavo shnei amalachim sedoma ba'erev. It says two of them went to stom. According to you, the three of them each had a mission. Two of the missions were already complete when they went to Avraham, which was to tell Sarah about the child and to cure Avraham. Then there should have been only one malach going to Sodom. How come it says in the pasuk that two of them are going to Sodom? Dazal Michael ba'adei l'shazvei l'lot. Michael accompanied Gabriel in order to save Lot and to take him out of the city. Deikanami, I can prove that to you. Tichtiv vayafoch et ari ma'el v'loktiv vayafchu. But it says when it comes to destroying the cities of Sodom v'Amorah, it says vayafoch in the singular. Not in the plural. Well, if there were two of them then went, why is there only one of them that is causing the destruction? Ella, that two of them went, was Gabriel and Michael. Michael went to save Lot, and Gabriel does the hafacha, does the destruction. Shma mina. So now, Tosafot raises the issue that if you look in the psukim over there, there are numerous times where the plural is used, and that would almost contradict what we just concluded in the Gemara, that Michael went to save Lot, and Gabriel went to overturn the city. V'hikshah Arav Rabbeinu Elchanan ha-mashma lishna dekrashu shnei mitzilu k'rektiv v'yachaziku anashim biyado. And the plural, they grabbed Lot to pull him out of the city. V'chtiv v'yotziyu v'yinichu michutzir. They took him out, they put him down outside the city. All in the plural. V'chtiv v'atrei shemalei malach shebala foketzdom ki lo uchol asut devar ad bo'acha shama. And he explains to them, I can't do anything until you get there. So then Tosfot's answer is very interesting. He says, Vesh Lamar, Shineim Otsiu Chutzir. Both of them accompanied him out of the city. Umichael Alachimo Ad Tsoar. Michael went with him until Tsoar. He requests to go to Tsoar, so they saved Tsoar on his behalf. In the end, he doesn't go there. He ends up going up to the cave. But Gabriel, Aya Mitzavel, told him Aher. Gabriel was pushing him out because Gabriel couldn't do his job until Lot left. So the reason both of them are there is because Gabriel needs Lot to leave in order to proceed with his job, which is to destroy the city. And so therefore they, in essence, help each other until the point where there's a split in their jobs, which is at one point Michael has to accompany Lot and continue to accompany Lot, and Gabriel's job is to destroy Sodom. Tosfot also asks the very famous question, which is, don't we have a principle, the ein malach echad oseh shtei shlichot, that one malach doesn't do two messages? The whole idea of a malach is he has a particular mission that he has to carry out, and he has one sole mission, and that's it. He doesn't come with multiple missions. He doesn't juggle things. Over here, Michael is doing two jobs. He's curing, he is giving the news to Sarah, and he's also taking Lot or saving Lot from this city. Yesh lamar, dekan lo asa Michael b'shlichut achat. Says, no, he didn't do it in one sending. It was two missions that he was sent on. He was only God's emissary once to go to Sarah, and then there was a second instruction to go to save Lot. And his second mission only begins after he finishes with Sarah. And in addition to that, he says, in addition to that, maybe in only one place you can do one shlichut, but maybe in multiple destinations you could do a different thing in each destination. That's what the Tosafot suggests as an answer as to how Michael is performing two jobs over here. Why does it say by Avram when he presents the offer to Malachim to host them, it says, King ta'aseh kasher dibarta. We'll do what you say, we'll do what you ask, you beseeched us to come and spend time with you, we're going to do that. They acquiesce. And what's the difference by Lot? Dichtiv vayitzar ba me'od. He has to press them, he has to push them in order for them to acquiesce, to stay with them. So Rabbi Elazar mikan, from this you learn, shemisarvim lekatan ve'em misarvim legadol, that you can refuse an offer from someone who is of a lower stature, but you cannot refuse an offer from someone who is of a higher stature. And especially, again, this is in a society that is very hierarchical. When the person of a higher stature tells you to do something or offers you to do something, out of anava, you don't refuse. You simply acquiesce because that's the proper etiquette. On the other hand, when it's someone who is of a lower stature or of a peer of yours, over there, out of anavad, of humility, you refuse. You say no, thank you, in order not to take up the kavod. Now, if they persist or they press on, then you can accept it. But up front, you should at least demur so that it doesn't look like you are saying, I am deserving of this kavod. I am deserving of whatever you are giving me. But you should act in a humble manner and upfront refuse to accept that gift. But when it's someone who's greater than you, then it's not proper etiquette to refuse or to demur in that case. All right, we're going to stop here by the second line down on the top of Pei Zayin Amud Aleph.